You're listening to Dr. Bill Cortestis and Dr. Gaurav Bahardi on It's Complicated, the podcast that uncomplicates the mental and physical aspects of life and the aesthetic surgery to help anyone committed to achieving their personal best.
Hey, everybody. I'm Dr. Gaurav Bahardi.
And I'm Dr. Bill Cortestis.
Welcome back to the podcast. It's complicated. You know, one thing that's interesting is looking your best actually can be kind of complicated, and figuring out how to achieve it can be complicated, whether that be through diet, exercise, skincare, what you wear, mental wellness. And it's hard to put all that stuff together. And one of the areas of our overall aesthetic physique that is the hardest, and we're the most hard on each other about, is your face.
So G just told me I'm super old. I just had a birthday recently, and he said, you got to do something with that face. So this is a good segue into this topic about facial rejuvenation. What do you do, and how do we attack it, and how do we prevent this aging process?
One of the things I was thinking about for this, Bill, is within a snap of a finger, you realize that, oh my God, I'm middle-aged. Like Bill's older, but like, you know, in our 40s, and things start to change. And it's not too late, but there are things that we could have been doing earlier to actually slow all this down. And I think that it's an important thing, and it affects all of us. So this is not something that we just talk about for our patients. This is like me. I mean, this is Bill. This is our wives, our loved ones, our parents. You know what I'm saying, Bill?
Heck yeah. I mean, isn't it amazing though, when you see some friends you grew up with that haven't been necessarily taking care of themselves per se, and they don't look exactly the same as you do. And everybody's like, what have you been doing? And there's some simple tricks to the trade, you know, and that's what we're going to chat about today. It's like, how do we uncomplicate this aging process?
Well, I think one of the big things is, when should you start? Is it now? Should we be starting in our 40s? What do you recommend to patients, knowing what you know now?
I mean, we always got to be thinking about stopping the aging process. I mean, that is the end goal, right? And part of it is what you do with your body. And G and I talk about this all the time with wellness, right? Like, how do we take care of ourselves? What do we do to make sure that we're doing the right necessary things to prevent this whole process? And watching what you eat, making sure you don't smoke, avoiding sun exposure. Those are the common things that, you know, we all should be doing. And you start that process pretty darn early.
Start in childhood, I think. When you have children, you have the opportunity to begin that process. And like you were saying, Bill, it's sun protection, moisturizing, and then they have to deal with acne and using just gentle skin washes and, you know, moisturizing their skin. All these things are critically important that you and I did not do when we were kids. We did not do when we were teenagers, and sure as hell probably didn't do it in college either. But all that during that time, I think this idea of prejuvenation is critical. And so there's no age to really, it that's off limits. And a lot's changed. I mean, what do you think's been the biggest change over the past couple of decades with regards to facial aging?
Well, I think traditionally, kind of what we've been taught is you wait till you get really in bad shape, and then you do a big surgical intervention to kind of correct it. And I think that's the old adage. And I think the new kind of school thinking is what you were talking about, this prejuvenation, this trying to avoid these big mega operations. Now, there are cases where that's the case, and that's what we should be doing. However, if you can prevent that, I mean, that's the golden ticket right there, right? What can we do? And what are the little things you can do along the way to help this process in a very slow, methodical way to avoid those big operations?
Yeah. And I think that that's the key, is taking something that could be a really huge intervention, like a pan facial rejuvenation, facelift, brow lift, upper lid, lower lid, fat grafting, CO2 laser, rhinoplasty, and just condensing that down. And if you spread that out over decades, you potentially have to do less. And the other thing is going to be, you don't want to change the way you look. And I think this is something that Bill and I both have figured out, and a lot of other providers have, is that patients kind of want to retain their aesthetic, their look, and continue in life through that. They don't want to yo-yo and look young, old, young, old, young, old, or look like something and then get augmented up to something else.
Yeah, I mean, part of it's you want to be age appropriate, but be the best version of yourself that you can be at that specific age. So back to your original question, at what age point? I think at every age, you start thinking about the aging process and what you can do to better yourself at that particular age, whether you're in your 20s, your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, or your 60s. How can you be the best version of you at that age?
Yeah, I agree. And so much of it boils down to this combination of lifestyle, your dietary behaviors, your exercise behaviors, your mental health, and then other things that you can do to combine with that to be your personal best. So it's so funny how your face can reveal kind of how you're feeling and how your overall stress levels can affect the and impact things like that.
And don't forget the things that are often forgotten with aging process. In men, it's hair loss and also kind of dental rejuvenation and how your teeth appear and your mouth appears within this whole structure. So that all that really plays a huge part in the aging process.
You know, one of the interesting things is, you know, tying this into reality is, you know, Bill, I'm sure you have it, but I have a patient I can think of vividly who has always been rigorous about just, you know, their overall health and taking care of their face and body. And I had no idea after one day when I saw her in follow-up, I saw her little face sheet, which has all their information, you know, in regards to our system and things like age and address and all this stuff. And I picked this thing up and I look at it and I'll be damned. This lady is like almost 80 years old and looks just stunning. Looks maybe 50s. And you would never know from a standpoint looking at her. I mean, her results are normal. She doesn't look pulled. She looks very, you know, I mean, it just was perfect. And it was one of those times when I saw, I'm like, man, this is incredible. And, you know, so much of that, I can tell you, at least for her, some of it's surgical, but the other is lifestyle and just the way that she takes care of herself. And it's pretty remarkable when you put those things together. I mean, you can just tell, but you would never know. They totally can fool you in regards to kind of where they actually are in their life.
Yeah, the same situation. Patient's exactly 80. And every time she comes in the office, I ask the staff members, without looking at the sheet, tell me how old she is. And, you know, it's always a little game we play because there's always a different person bringing her back. And they never guess it right, as you would imagine, right? It's always, you know, 20 years less than what her actual age is.
You know, and I think there's two things that go into play. They're doing stuff before they ever have anything, and they're doing stuff after they have something. And by the something, I'm talking about a surgical intervention or a procedure. That's the key, is they're always taking care of it. It's like getting a nice car. When you get a nice car, whether it be a Ferrari or Lamborghini or a Toyota or a Ford Pinto, you got to maintain it. You have to do normal basic stuff like oil change, etc. But if you want it to always look good, you still have to wash it. You still have to detail it. You still have to maybe get a ceramic coat on it, or you can do different things and glaze the tires. And if you do that appropriately, even with kind of the analogy is, you know, your overall way that you take care of your body, your face, your skin, you know, your muscles, et cetera, you're going to be able to tell. And that's a lifelong process. What would you say is some of the other patient's secrets, Bill?
It is a combination of them taking care of themselves and having intervention. And what are those interventions? Again, we mentioned the beginning stuff, right? You got to take care of yourself. You got to avoid sun exposure, sunscreen, all the normal stuff. In addition to that, little secrets that I think everybody should be doing. Number one, get on the appropriate skincare. If you are on the right skincare products for your type of skin, it will make a world of difference for you. You know, go seek a good either dermatologist or esthetician or somebody that can actually help you in this journey of what is best for your skin. That is by far number one. Appropriate neurotoxin to avoid long-term wrinkles and those wrinkles setting in to be static wrinkles. I mean, there's a game changer for folks to be able to use that. In addition to that, putting fillers in the right location, because as you know, as we get older, we lose volume in certain parts of our face. And if we can avoid those kind of deep inset wrinkles that cause the shadowing effect, it will help us. I mean, those are the mainstays, right? Botox, filler, skincare.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, One of the big things to remember, though, is when we talk about filler, filler sometimes gets a negative connotation. Filler can be used very appropriately, strategically, discreetly, to where no one would know, and you get a beautiful, attractive effect. And I think that's one thing we need to make sure of. So when you use filler, filler is usually done in a way you, most people can't even tell. And neurotoxin is a word that Bill used. Neurotoxin means Botox, means Dysport, means Xeomin, means Daxxify, means Jeuveau. So all those agents are all neurotoxins, and they all are very nice in slowing down the process of developing of static wrinkles. Static are wrinkles that are stuck. Dynamic wrinkles are wrinkles that form when you furrow your muscles. And you know that in combination with what Bill was mentioning of good skincare and generalized skin rejuvenation. And one thing we can't forget about is, you know, seeing an esthetician or getting things like facials and microneedling and small, even like true microdermabrasion, things of that nature, not even real surgical procedures, are super important. And using facial scrubs at home, different things, this concept of stimulating your outer skin to slough off and for new skin to come to the surface and avoiding sun, all that stuff in concert are things that people can be doing. Most of these things you can be doing just on your own at home. And then you can add in interventions when you come see, you know, someone like us in our office.
That's the pillar. Like if you look at this as a pyramid, those are the foundational pieces that I think everybody should be doing. And you can start as early as in your 20s to be able to start this process of doing that. And those foundational things can really make a huge difference in patients. As part of that foundational piece, as a layering process, I think microneedling is one of the most underused kind of services that are out there that can really make a distinct difference in patients. And you can use microneedling by itself, or you can do it with some sort of energy, including radio frequency, that it can help tighten the skin, produce this collagen and elastin to kind of help strengthen the your face and give you a little bit more of a tightening effect.
Yeah. What's really funny about facial aesthetics and facial aging is that, and this is kind of how things are sometimes in plastic surgery, there are things that were done way back when that we look at now and be like, ooh, I would never do that. But there are some things that were done way back when and they got taken off and now they're back in the market and they're the hot thing. For example, you know, this idea of threads. Threads in the past had a very negative connotation. Now they've really gained a lot of steam in the marketplace. Bill, what do you think about threads and should we use them or not?
You know, I think there's an appropriate patient for every sort of intervention that we do have. And that's the beauty of it, right? We have all these different interventions that are out there and that we can pick and choose the ones we want for that particular patient. So you have a patient who is a little on the younger side or potentially a little older that doesn't necessarily want to undergo a huge surgical intervention, understands the nuances with threads and that it's not going to last forever. I think they're an appropriate candidate, right? If as long as they know what they're going to end up getting out of it. I mean, what do you think about threads in general? Like, are you a big proponent or are you one of these docs that's like, nope, surgery, that's the only answer for you?
You know, I think that it depends. And I think that this is where, you know, the artistry comes into this. And when we or other providers are talking to a patient, is we got to figure out what they want, what they're willing to do to get that endpoint. And there are certain patients who may be better candidates for a surgical intervention like a facelift, but they just aren't wanting to have that. And they essentially do just want a little bit of vertical traction on their skin or a little bit of tightening in their neck. And so the idea of using threads that are absorbable, not permanent, I think is reasonable. And but the thing that we have to balance with that is the expectation of what they're going to really achieve. You can get a marginal improvement and you can also stimulate collagen production. So at least in our practice, with what I've seen, what Bill's seen, what our injectors and our other providers have seen, they've been very favorable, but we're combining this. This is just a part of the aesthetic armamentarium to combat the aging process on the piggybacking on top of fillers and Botox, some surgical intervention, as well as laser resurfacing, et cetera. So I think it's here to stay. I think it's a good tool, but it has its specific place and it depends on the patient. You know what I mean?
How does a patient who they're like, I'm interested in this. I want to stop the aging process. Dr. Bardi, I like you. I think you're great. I'm going to come see you. But what if they can't come in to see you and they go to, you know, the med spa down the street And this is the bad side of plastic surgery, right? If they don't know the place that they're going to and they get hit up, they're like, you need 20 syringes of filler and you need 3 threads and you need this laser treatment and you need it. And they're kind of preying on, you know, the person's insecurities or want and desire to kind of stop the aging process. What is your advice to these patients and how to tell whether or not this is a good location for them? What should they be thinking about, not thinking about, and how do they make those decisions?
I think the biggest thing is never do anything you're not fully committed for that you don't understand. And it's okay to go slow. Anyone who's coming at you and trying to upsell and add a bunch of volume to your face and you're not ready for it, you've never had it, I'd probably put the brakes on it a little bit because it's going to be more of a significant change. And a lot of times people aren't ready for that. And I think one thing for Bill and I is we don't want our patients or the entire aesthetic community or the entire country to get overtreated, because then they're going to kind of have this connotation like, oh, this is how facial aesthetics is. I'm not interested. The truth is, slow, methodical, continued improvements are kind of what I prefer. I think Bill's very similar. So are our providers. You know, sometimes we work with a lot of our industry partners, and initially they were all like, you know, you need to treat to correction. Well, who in the hell decides what correction is? You decide that. The patients decide that. It's not some manufacturer of a medication or the filler. It's got to be more personal than that. And so I think that's one of the biggest things is like, we have to figure out what your actual goals and endpoints are and know that you don't have to achieve that all in one setting. Number one, it's expensive. Number two, maybe a high risk of complications if you put 20 syringes in somebody's face, right? And then you should just feel good about the people you're seeing and they shouldn't be pushy. We form these deep connections with patients, whether it be a Botox treatment or even a skincare consult. They end up being lifelong friends, patients, and we learn so much about each other. So that's kind of our strategy on it.
I think you're spot on. The only thing I would say is like, in addition, is like, it's okay to talk about budget, right? It's like, okay to ask the patients like, hey, what are you looking to do right now? Are you, you know, is this a tiptoe in the water kind of phenomenon? You want to do maintenance treatment or do you want to go all in and do something really aggressive right now and then do maintenance? And knowing where the patient's coming from an expectation standpoint goes a long way.
Yeah. And I think you and I know how to do that because we're plastic surgeons. So a lot of times we're trying to figure out, all right, do they want a surgical intervention or a non-surgical intervention? So I think we're made for that. And I think we're trying to pass that on to our other providers, whether it be other surgeons, but also, you know, the non-surgical providers. You know, one thing I was making sure that we didn't forget is like, Bill, you and I don't have these beautiful girlish faces without trying. And what about guys? What do guys need to do? Are guys different than women? Or what is our approach on guys? What do they need to do to look fresh and still be competitive, attract their spouses or partners, and be good in the workplace?
I think those foundational pieces that we talked about go, you know, with both men and women, without a doubt, right? Skincare, neurotoxin, filler.
100%. And the one nice thing for guys is that we all shave. So the guys who wear a clean face, you're basically prepping your skin. And that's why we always have this youthful skin after we shave our beards. And that guys should think about resurfacing the remainder of their face, right? A lot of times you don't have to actually treat this area. So a laser resurfacing for them in the future is still not out of the norm. I mean, how many of your patients now are guys?
It's growing every year. I would say right now about 25-30%.
Yeah. And it's a big deal. And I think they care, we care just as much as any female does about how we look. And for guys, I think it might set in a little later, but when we start looking in the mirror and we see some of those signs of facial aging, it's really sobering. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but a lot of times we're just not ready for it, just like women aren't ready for it. And there's a way that if we can be on top of it from the get-go, you can just slow it down and kind of keep the look that you feel confident with, but more importantly, that the look that you feel matches how you feel. So the way you look on the outside can match how you're feeling on the inside.
You know, one thing I wish I'd have known a lot sooner was hair restoration. You know, I ended up having neograft myself and it was great. It was a super great procedure. Super glad I did it. I was balding. But if I could have prevented a lot of that hair loss process a lot sooner,
that's a great point.
Knowing that it was something that was easily done, I wish I would have known.
What are some things you'd recommend to the listeners now just for hair loss prevention?
I think number one, I tell every one of my patients that comes in for hair loss, is like, I wish I had started Propecia a lot sooner. Mm-hmm.
No issue with libido for you?
Zero. And that's the thing, is like side effects are practically none. And if you have those side effects, you just stop the medication pretty early on and everything goes back to normal. So if you start Propecia super early, you can prevent further hair loss. You can stabilize where you're at.
That's super important. You keep what you got. So even if you get a hair transfer, you want to keep what you got and also ensure that what's been transferred survives. So it's a big one. What other stuff do you do for hair loss prevention?
So with the minoxidil shampoo, you can really kind of help with thickening of your current hair follicles that you do have. I like taking a supplement. The one I prefer is Nutrafol because I think it really does help to thicken the hair that you do already have. And for folks that have gone a little too far with their hair loss, I think doing hair transplantation. There's robotic surgery now. There's also a neograft, which I had, the procedure I have, or the traditional strip method. They all work really remarkably well to enhance a male's hairline.
Yeah. And one other thing is going to be PRP. We do a fair amount in the office of, and the idea of PRP is really to stimulate kind of a vasodilatory response and neovascularization to the follicles. And we've actually seen repopulation of areas that have been devoid of hair follicles. So I think that's nice. And that's a serial treatment, meaning you get that throughout the year, multiple times a year. And one other thing too is minoxidil. You know, a lot of us are now using kind of oral minoxidil, low dose, and that's been shown to show pretty significant benefits. So I agree, Bill. This is, again, one of those things is awareness and trying to avoid something from getting to the extreme to where you have to do something more aggressive to bring it back. We've talked a lot about our views on facial aesthetics. We didn't really talk about surgery today, but what is the future? Like, what do we think is going to happen 10, 20 years down the road when we're talking about the aging face? Or what are we going to be doing something totally different?
This is just my view, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. But my view is I think we're going to limit the amount of actual surgical intervention. I think surgery is still going to be there, but I think with the nuances with some of these energy-based devices that we have, these new liposuction techniques we have, these minimally invasive procedures, surgery is going to be one of those things where it's not going to be as much as these minimally invasive procedures.
Yeah. And I think we're starting to see that. Another case example is that I have a couple of patients, and you do too, Bill, I'm sure. There are women who are in their 60s, maybe in their 70s, and they actually just haven't had a facelift. They've had just all the non-invasive therapies ad nauseum. They've had neuromodulators and fillers, and they've used biostimulators. We haven't talked much about biostimulators, things like Sculptra, Radiesse. These are agents that actually stimulate collagen production. And some of them have had fat grafting, and they have not had the fundamental need to actually have some surgical intervention. They've had smaller stuff, maybe just upper lid procedure, or they've had little resurfacing procedures, but not true facelifting procedures. And I think that's pretty interesting. That's not to say that they're going to go out of the wayside, by the wayside, but there is going to be this trend of bringing in energy, bringing in technology, even into the operating room. We're doing it right now, right, Bill? We're basically shortening the incision, doing something smaller, and combining technology and energy in there and getting a better outcome.
Tell our listeners a little bit of that, one of those procedures that you do. I would say you do probably do this 2 to 3 times a week, where you do a mini facelift, and you know, instead of doing a full face and neck lift, that you'll end up doing some sort of energy-based device for the neck.
So the idea is that, number one, patients don't want to have a long scar ideally. So the shorter the scar, the better to a patient. But what we can do is we can lift and tighten the deep soft tissues, the smass layer that has dropped, and get jawline correction and do a short scar facelift. But for the neck, what we can do is you can get rid of the extra fat using some liposuctioning techniques, and then you can stimulate skin contraction using energy. So energy is kind of crazy. And this is just a wild thing about what we do in the operating room and in surgery, is that you use something sharp or dangerous, like a knife, something energetic and but dangerous, like RF energy or a laser. But the idea is we use this in a very controlled fashion to cause a little bit of, quote, trauma, which essentially leads to collagenesis. It leads to your body responding to that trauma. And that response typically is more collagen production and tightening. And so we can use those things to get a improved aesthetic outcome without making the bigger incisions.
I did a case today with our PA. I thought it was fantastic, right? I went in and did a lip lift. So for individuals who have a very elongated upper lip, a couple ways to kind of help with that. One of them, which is surgery. So you can actually remove some of the upper lip through a skin excision, but you leave the scar directly underneath the nose. And so this patient really wanted the minimal amount of surgery with the least amount of scars, but she also wanted some facial rejuvenation. So our PA came in and did a thread lift. So she did her thread lift to help her mid face and central face. And I ended up doing her lip lift. And it was a great kind of segue into where facial rejuvenation is going to end up going. It's going to be this combo of what you just said, G, where you're doing like minimally invasive procedures and you're actually doing some surgery.
The future is so bright, and eventually it's going to, you know, surgery is going to fall by the wayside and it'll be like that last course type thing. I don't know if it's going to be in, you know, our kids' lifetimes, but it's definitely on the horizon. You know, we've spoken about kind of the trends of things moving non-surgically and eventually, you know, surgery kind of fading out. But I think we would almost want to backtrack, because the truth is there are times, Bill, when people walk into the office, they got a big gobble neck, they got a bunch of excess skin on their eyes or big bulging fat pads around their eyes. Can you take care of those patients non-surgically? And if not, why not?
It's amazing you asked that question, G, and I'll go ahead and tell you right now, I always say surgery trumps everything else right now. I know we talked about where the trends are going, but surgery wins out all day long. If you want a big difference, surgery is the way to go. And there's certain parts of your body and face that you can't treat with minimally invasive or non-invasive devices. And one of those is excess skin in the upper eyelids, excess bags in your lower eyelids. Those are best treated surgically. And you can do it with these small incisions in areas and locations where people would never know you had surgery. And I always say the best surgical intervention is one that nobody ever knows you had anything done, but they look at you and you're like, wow, you look amazing. And I think you can do that with eyelid surgery. And you mentioned another one, right? These individuals with large necks, excess skin, they're not great minimally invasive candidates. Would you agree? Are there any other scenarios where you say, you know what, surgery wins out? We should do surgery on this.
Yeah. You know, one of the other areas I'd mentioned is sometimes for rhinoplasty, for nasal modification, you know, there's ideas of liquid rhinoplasty, but this is one of those interesting things where when I talk about with other colleagues, liquid rhinoplasty, you're adding stuff to the nose. Traditional rhinoplasty, you're removing stuff from the nose. And I was watching one of my buddies online, Richard Reich in New York, and he did this nice little expose, you know, like avoid the avatar nose. And what that means is they just keep adding to try to get a hump addressed, and you keep adding in the area between your eyes and on the bridge of the nose, you end up looking like you're become like an avatar, like in the movie Avatar. And like, I think that's an important thing to note. Like, hey, I mean, this is fine. Yeah, you can get a liquid rhinoplasty, but you're going to look so much better if you get a formal rhinoplasty and have the reductive type of maneuvers performed and adjust things so that there is more facial harmony. And so I think that those are some of the ones that I would say. And I think that you have to balance what we're talking about with a patient's goals. And a lot of times they just want it done and definitive. When I hear those words, like, I don't want to have to keep messing with this, I need long-term duration, that's usually one of the things you're like, all right. For example, some, you know, mid-50s comes in, they're like, I want something definitive. I want jawline to show. I want this neck to be sharp. I want the brows to be in right position. And they're like, and I don't want to have to keep getting X done. Surgery does that. And that's the beautiful thing about surgery, you know? It's definitive, it works, you get long duration.
So when somebody asks you, and I get asked this every time I do any sort of facial rejuvenation, how long is it going to last, doc? How long is it going to last? It's a $1 million question. What's your response, G?
I say it depends. But I do reference a couple of things that have been in our literature. And there have been some twin studies that have been done where one of the twins gets a procedure, the other twin doesn't. And they look at this patient 10 years down the road and other intervals down the road. And the dramatic difference between the aging process is it's enormous. So it does last. It does show itself for the patient's entire lifetime. But what happens though is you still age. So you get a facelift, you get a breast lift, whatever we're talking about, the aging process continues. And your ability to have robust wound healing response, the way that your body behaves, your collagen volume, your elastin volume, all that stuff is being altered. So you're continually aging. With that being said, it typically can vary between 7 to 10, sometimes 15 years in certain patients. And the difference in that variable is how hard they go. If, you know, this one patient just goes nuts, is hardcore, rages out all the time, in the sun all the time, doesn't take care of their skin, they're going to age more quickly versus the individual who's getting periodic resurfacing and neuromodulators, amazing skincare coming into your office and being taken care of, which is what we prefer. We prefer to do something big, and then we do a lot of small little things so that they don't have to do something big again in the future. So again, it's a little variable.
Yeah. I always say that my analogy is, hey, we're turning back the clock, and every procedure turns back the clock at a different amount. And then we start aging day one, just like you said, like it's an immediate thing. And then the key with this is we're doing an intervention. You have to have maintenance. And I thought you brought up the analogy with your car. I think that's a really good analogy. It's like, you have to stay on top of it, right? You can't just have it done, not do anything. You know, we talk about this with our kids too, right? It's like sometimes kids expect, if they want to be a better swimmer, they go in the pool one day, the next day they're going to be ready for the Olympics. No, it's like you have to do this slow, methodical change for them to see an impact. And it's not going to be an overnight success, right? You can do that with surgery, but you still have to do the maintenance work.
You know, another analogy, just to make sure our entire audience gets this, on what it means to like take care of yourself, is like a home. So you, let's say you build a home, a stunning home. It's got freaking everything, everything you could imagine. That home still has to be taken care of, manicured, upgraded. Periodic things need to happen. Because guess what? If you don't, 10 years from now, when you go to sell it, it's dated and you got to dump money into it to bring it back up to market, or you're going to lose a lot of money. So I think it's a similar kind of concept. We always have to be taking care of things and maintaining them. And that goes with your facial aesthetic health, your generalized body aesthetic health.
To get special updates and to be notified by email when a new episode is available, click the link in the show notes to sign up for our email list. Follow us on Instagram at HKB Cosmetic Surgery.
Links to learn more about anything mentioned on today's show are available in the show notes. To learn more about Dr. Bill Cortesis and Dr. Gaurav Bahardi and the entire team of HKB Cosmetic Surgery, just go to hkbsurgery.com or follow HKB on Instagram at HKB Cosmetic Surgery. Subscribe to our newsletter for key takeaways from each episode, links to any resources we discuss, and promo codes or giveaways from HKB and our partners. If this show has helped you in any way, if you learned something, write a review on Apple Podcasts and share the podcast with a friend. Take a screenshot of this podcast episode with your phone and show it at your consultation or appointment, or mention the promo code PODCAST to receive $25 off any service or product of $50 or more. It's Complicated is a production of The Axis, THEAXIS.io.